the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. And, Jimmy, we head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a longtime friend of the program and a very special guest.
Well, we do. We're very pleased to be joined by Steve Caldwell, who was a longtime Tennessee assistant coach. And, in fact, Tennessee hasn't won the SEC or the East Division since Steve Caldwell was patrolling the sidelines as an assistant coach at Tennessee. Steve, how you doing?
Well, I like that introduction. That was pretty good. I hadn't even thought about that. I'm doing well, Jimmy. You got me all fired up right there, back here on the phone with you and John. It's just, I'm excited about being back, obviously, and hopefully we're getting this thing back where it belongs.
Well, talk about that. What does that mean to you to come back to Tennessee and to wear that orange and white?
It's hard to even explain. When I left here, my goal was to someday be back. And, you know, my daughter and her husband and kids obviously live here. She's a graduate of the University of Tennessee, and so is her husband. My son and his wife live here. He's a graduate of the University of Tennessee. So mine and Lisa's goal was at some point in our career to have an opportunity to be back here and be a part of this program. And when Coach Fulmer came back, that even made it more special. So to say we're elated and excited about it is just unbelievable.
Talk about your role as Assistant Director of Life Skills and just helping the student-athletes. Talk about your role at Tennessee.
Well, you know, that's something that I'm really looking forward to, and we're working on that as we go. You know, after being in the coaching profession for 43 years and being a part of the SEC for 20 of that 43, you know, I feel like that I've seen a lot of things happen in my career and been a part of a lot of young men's life. And hopefully what I can do is just be there to support them, support their families, answer any questions they have during the recruiting process. And once they get on campus, just be here to be another resource for them. What I want to be able to do is, you know, give these guys someone to come and sit down and talk to besides just their coaches, just to have that another voice and all of us be on the same page. I've told some of the kids already on campus, don't come and talk to me about your playing time. That's between you and your coach. I'm here as a life coach more than anything, not as a football coach.
Steve, it is great to talk with you again. And how important do you think it is at this point in time, because for years you wanted to make sure that somebody was doing well academically, somebody was doing well physically, but the wellness aspect in just terms of what any young man or woman can wind up dealing with at any point in time in life, what is it like to have a hand in trying to help them be very healthy in that aspect as well?
John, I've always said in the recruiting process and even when I met with my players that someday I would be judged at a lot higher level than for just the wins and losses. And I think that's for the influence that I have on these young men. And I feel like in this day and time, especially with the problems that we're going through right now, that it's going to be larger than ever, because I think that there is more situations out there, and we have a lot more distractions than ever. And just the process of being able to get them on campus and then be a part of their life and help them grow as young men each year, each day, is going to be more and more important as we go on.
You and Jimmy were talking about earlier, a key part of Philip Fulmer and his staff when he was a football coach. What is it like to join the staff of Philip Fulmer, athletics director, and what do you think of Coach in his role at Tennessee now?
Well, obviously, I don't think there's even anyone that could do any better job than what he is doing. And obviously, he's of all the times for us to get the coronavirus, you know, and it's making it even a tougher adjustment for all of us. But I just think Coach is doing a great job. Jimmy and I've had this conversation before. I don't know that there's anyone in the country that this university and this athletic department and the football program means any more to anyone than it does to him. And he puts his life and soul into this university and into this job, and for me to be a part of it, and then after being with him for 15 years and then the opportunity to come back and be a part of it again is just a great feeling for me.
I guess Steve Caldwell, former Tennessee assistant coach, he is now assistant director for life skills at Tennessee and the athletic department. Steve, do you see part of your role is trying to help these young men being able to develop good habits, academics, handling money, dealing with the media and interviews, how to treat women? Do you see those as part of your role?
Yes, very much so, Jimmy. I think that's, you nailed it right there. That's what it's all about. It's everyday life, exactly. You know, how to treat people, how to act in the classroom, what to do when you get here and you are successful. And as we all know, you know, the way you treat people, treat women especially, having my own daughter and two granddaughters, being married for 46 years, how my wife put up with me that long, I'm not really sure, but she did. But all of those little things as they're growing up and, you know, when they leave high school and come here, I know they think they're grown men and they have all the answers. But I would say that 75 to 80% of them, once they get here and they're away from home that first time, everything changes. So to be here again and to be able to just sit down and talk to them about all of these things, I think I can be a big asset to them.
Steve, one of the things that we have seen in college football, an unprecedented number of transfers on an annual basis. And I wonder, you being on the coaching side of that, and you've seen this evolve through the years, is there a common thread? Is there anything that you think in your role you might be able to help kids that that seem to be transferring at such an alarming rate?
Well, I think the number one thing I would have to say, when I sit down and talk to a young man, if you give up on something as easy as I think what we see some people doing at this point in time, you're going to give up easy when your wife gets mad at you or you have a child in trouble. You know, I just think there's so many things out there that we've made it easier for them to just quit, Jimmy. And instead of them having to fight their way through and earn that right to get on the field, if you're going to be one of those best 11 or whatever, or maybe it's the best 22, you know, let's don't make it so easy on a young man. And just to be able to sit down and talk to him about, you got a lot of decisions to make, to walk away from one this early in life because things aren't going exactly the way you thought they were going to. I'm obviously not a big fan of the transfer rule that easily.
Steve, as you look at what is in front of those that are playing football for the University of Tennessee with the way that last year finished, what was it like to, from the other side of the fence in the SEC West, to see Tennessee be able to work through a 1-4 start and finish with as much momentum and everybody kind of working in the same direction to really turn what was a rough start into a really fine finish.
Well, I didn't get to watch them a lot, John, but just, you know, enjoying the bowl game. I watched a little bit of the bowl game, and just to see where, like you said, where they started and where they ended up, the momentum coming into this spring and the great job that Coach Pruitt and his staff is doing recruiting, I think all that is carried over. And even an opportunity to, I've told the coaches a couple of times when I have been on Zoom calls with them that what they've been able to do, I think, is really not only helped our football team right now, but just help our whole ball community stay excited about athletics, about football especially, and the future that we have coming.
Did you ever imagine that you would be a part of so many virtual meeting rooms?
Not in my life. I didn't know what one was, to be honest with you. There's been a lot of things the last couple of months that I've done that I never dreamed I would do. You know, and I just, you know, I got to take my hat off to our coaching staff. I cannot imagine them trying to teach. And really, when I say our coaching staff, I guess it's our whole university, you know, going online, doing all online classes for our students all over the campus to finish, and then tied into our football players and them having meetings, being able to commute and watch or communicate with them and watch film with them virtually. It would be tough on a 64-year-old that doesn't know that much about all that stuff to do. I can tell you that. I did not miss that part of it this spring.
I guess Steve Caldwell. Steve, I'm going to guess that when you're on that Tennessee staff, there were probably a number of years heading into June when you might have had one commitment or two commitments or no commitments. And yet here Tennessee stands at 24 commitments. That's quite a change, isn't it?
Completely different. You know, you and I talked a few weeks ago a little bit about that. And I was actually trying to think, you know, if I'd ever been through anything like this. And then, like you just said, when I was here, a lot of times you didn't know you were going to sign them until signing day. There are all these early commitments weren't out there. You know, you were still thinking, okay, we're waiting on so-and-so to sign. Let's hope we get him. You know, I think we're going to get him, Coach. But, this is completely different than anything that I have been through. 2 years ago at Arkansas, I guess our first full recruiting year, you know, we had I couldn't say exactly what the number was, but it was probably the first class that I've been associated with that there was that many kids that had committed. But this is really unusual. I think it's again, how much work, how hard Jeremy recruits, how hard his staff works at it. I think you know, you got to take your hat off to these guys. The time and effort they have put into it this spring has definitely paid off.
I want to take you back a few years. You might recall the night of January the 4th, 1999, and you're in Tempe, Arizona. Tennessee wins a national championship. When I think back to that group of players going into that game, I know Florida State was favored for some reason by like 5.5 points. But when you went into that game as an assistant coach at Tennessee, was there much doubt that this was a team that was so resourceful it would find a way to win somehow and beat Florida State?
Not really, Jimmy. I think these kids that at that time, you know, we made it through the Arkansas game. Well, I guess you got to go back to Syracuse to start with, right? Yeah. Winning it on the last second field goal, overtime against Florida, and then the comeback win against Arkansas. It was, you know, people use the term a team of destiny. And perhaps those guys, I don't think there was any way that Al Wilson and that crew was going to let anyone in the country beat us.
I also recall there was a quarterback at Florida State. I think his name was Chris Winkie on the Tennessee staff now. He, for some reason, he thinks that Florida State would have won if he'd been the quarterback. I don't know about
you know,
that.
He's never brought that up to me. In the few times that we've been, I'm proud you say, I might bring that up to him when we get back in the office next week.
You wouldn't do something like that, would you?
Oh, maybe just in the right time. But those, I don't think it would have made any difference who the quarterback was. I haven't watched that film in a long time, but I know those guys up front defensively were making a lot of things happen that night. I know T and our wide receiver crew just had a great game. It was one of those games where I remember they tried, an onside kick right at the end, right? And mm-hmm. we were able – I think they were offside, but it was just a night that we'll never forget for sure.
I know it had to be something to be a part of the first bowl championship series championship game, but do you kind of wish that in your 15 years at Tennessee that the college football playoff had been an option back then?
Oh, man, yeah. I mean – how many times would we have been in that in the 90s? That would have been a lot of fun because I think you go back to the, what was it, 99, I guess, when we got beat in Arkansas and really got knocked out of it. If we had been in the playoff at that point in time, you know, we had a great football team that year. In 2001, wow. We get beat in the championship game against LSU, which we'd beat them earlier in the year. Again, we should have been in, playoffs that year, and that was a great football team. Great defensive line, for sure.
Yeah, and I think you could go back to 97 and maybe a couple of other years, 95, and find other years where Tennessee could have conceivably been in the college football playoffs.
No doubt about it. Peyton's whole career there, 95, 96, like you said, 97. Number of years there, Jimmy, we could have been, it would have been like what you're seeing, I think, between, with Clemson and Alabama being in it so many times in the last few years, it would have been a lot of the same way with the University of Tennessee at that time.
Hey, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you back in Knoxville. Great to have you back on the staff at the athletic department. I know you'll do well in that role, and we certainly appreciate you taking the time to visit with us.
Well, thank you for having us, and looking forward to seeing you guys in person before too long.
Exactly.
Same here, Steve.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Steve. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
All right. Former Tennessee assistant Steve Caldwell, now assistant director of life skills at Tennessee.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Sports Talk today brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. That puts you on 99.1, the sports animal.
The sports animal and Alexa are best friends. Just tell her, Alexa, enable the 99.1 The Sports Animal skill.
Skill enabled.
Then anytime you want immediate Tennessee sports info, say, Alexa, play 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Okay, playing 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Today we're here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue.
John, I do think we ought to point this out, and I know you're aware of this, but we've talked about what's happening with minor league baseball, the concern about it going forward, how many young baseball players may be potentially denied the opportunity for a path to the major leagues. Well, David Price, who's recently signed with the L.A. Dodgers, he's going to give each Dodger minor leaguer $1,000 in the month of June. John, I think that's a heck of a gesture by somebody who really doesn't have great affiliation with that organization.
Yeah, has yet to throw a pitch that counts for the Los Angeles Dodgers. And to tackle a roster like that, And now he's not going, this doesn't include the guys that are on the 40-man roster, but I just think it's such an incredible effort on his part. And I think so many athletes, and you've had teams and organizations, the Twins are actually going to, if I'm not mistaken, pay all of their minor leaguers their normal stipend through the end of July. And it's impressive to see those organizations that are doing doing as much as they can for those that would be stadium workers, for those that would be that really don't have anything to draw income from right now. And for David Price to do this, again, with a franchise that he has yet to wear officially that uniform for, I think is very impressive.
Yeah, I do too. And we do see from time to time athletes make gestures like this. There have been a variety of things, but that one I thought was really cool, given the topic of the concern about the future of minor league teams and minor league players and their efforts to get to the show. So I thought that was a cool gesture by David Price.
Very much so. And, Jimmy, we've continued to highlight what is an outstanding class that goes in this year to the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, and we do that with our next guest, correct?
We do. Andy Landers, he's going into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame. He was a longtime coach with the Georgia women's basketball team, had a great record. He took teams to Final Four, and so we look forward to visiting with Andy Landers.
We look forward to doing that, and let me correct my statement. The Twins are actually committing to paying their minor leaguers through the end of August. In what would have been essentially the normal end of minor league baseball seasons, with the exception of a couple, but they are going to do that, full benefits, including health insurance, the $400 a week stipend. Look at the Twins doing that through the month of August, which to me is simply outstanding.
Yeah, I do too. I like that. Hopefully other – I know the Oakland A's are kind of different in that regard with their financial situation, but I would like to see other major league teams do the same thing.
Yeah, right now the A's, I think, would make a point to charge their players for parking if they could.
Yeah,
but that's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We look forward to catching up with Coach Landers next as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Buddy.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams. Today we're brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan as we're here on location where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Come take advantage of their month-end closeout as they want to move as many vehicles off the lot as they can. And they've already said goodbye to a number of new rides this afternoon. But, Jimmy, we head back to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline for a very special guest.
Well, we certainly do. And we are pleased to be joined by Andy Landers. Coach Landers is in the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame, the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and he's going to be inducted into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame this summer. Coach Landers, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Congratulations on your selection for induction into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame. I know that carries a lot of meaning for you since you're from this area.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, I'm in Maryville today. I'm up with my 94-year-old dad doing my chores, Jimmy. I try to come in every 2 weeks and do all my chores and keep things going for it.
You're not on a farm, are you?
Yeah, I am. I just got off the bush hog to talk to you.
Well, you should thank us. Andy, you weren't coaching a long time. When did you realize you wanted to become a coach?
Well, it for me, it was simple. You know, I grew up in Blount County in Maryville. Mm-hmm. My uncle was A.J. Wilson. A.J. Wilson was a very successful high school coach, both football and girls basketball, at Walland High School. Took a number of teams, I think 11 or 12, to the state tournament. Little single A school. This was before classification. Grew up rural, grew up in the country. Not a lot of neighbors, so you couldn't have a baseball game. Fell in love with basketball at a very early age. And, you know, I think when you're young like that, there's a good chance that an adult somewhere along the way will influence you. And that influence came from my uncle, A.J. Wilson. I knew in the sixth grade what I wanted to do, and was very fortunate to be able to do it.
So you talked about your uncle, A.J. Wilson. Were there other coaches that perhaps had a positive impact on you?
Absolutely. Ray Mears. You know, I grew up in the Ray Mears era. I remember listening to the Rifleman, to A.W. Davis, Jimmy Hahn, Jimmy Kahn. I could go way back. I remember when Bernard and Ernie came to town. But Stu Aberdeen and I were friends, and Ray Mears and I became good friends. Actually, you know, for 4 years after I graduated from college, I was fortunate to get the Roan State Community College job. That's when Roan State was just getting started. And I coached there, and that was at the time when Ray Mears, who I grew up idolizing, I thought Coach Mears was absolutely the best. He and Coach Aberdeen both, if people never got a chance to hear either of those two guys coach, and Aberdeen was his associate head coach, if they never got a chance to listen to either of those two guys speak, they missed a real thrill in their life, because they were master speakers. I mean, they just spellbound every crowd, whether it was kids at camp, officials, coaches, it didn't matter. So Mears was a big, big influence on me, and I started to tell you the story, and I'll finish here. He was having trouble, as you recall. He had some nerve problems, and he was on medication. This was after he had finished coaching, but he was still trying to do some things for Tennessee. And I thought, you know, this is my guy. I'm going to give him a buzz. And I called him one day. I said, Coach Mears, I said, this is Andy Landers. I said, I worked a number of your camps. I said, again, I've never met. I said, but I know you still do a lot of speaking, and I so enjoyed his speaking, you know, that I wanted to hear it as much as I could. I said, I just know you're still doing a lot of speaking. I said, if you ever need any company when you're going somewhere to speak, or if you want someone to drive you or ride with you, I said, please give me a buzz. Next week he called me. We met in Lenore City. I drove him to Chattanooga that spring. I drove him to a number of speaking engagements, and we became good friends. So, those guys. And then when I got to Georgia, Hugh Durham, Coach Durham was the men's coach at Georgia, perhaps one of the best, well, in my mind, definitely one of the best defensive basketball coaches to coach men's basketball. You know, he was my mentor. He was my guy. He helped me through. I was in over my head. I mean, I got the job at Georgia. I was 26 years old. I was a head coach when I was 22 at Roan State. And I was trying to teach myself, and being able to go watch him every day practice, was a real education for me. We remain best friends to this day. Hmm.
Coach Landers, certainly appreciate your time, and congratulations on the much-deserved honor. I want to go – you mentioned how young you were when you became the head coach at Roan State. What was it like to take control of a program in its infancy and just start to build your resume as a head coach? What was it like to run a program at such a young age?
You know, it was a real blessing for me to get the job, because I've been a grad assistant for 1 year at Tennessee Tech. I went to Tennessee Tech, graduated master's and bachelor's from there. But, you know, I get to Roan State, and this is a new community college, and it's projected to be the smallest community college in the state. At the time, they only had one building and the gymnasium, the physical education building. So, I'll never forget, the baseball coach had coached the year before I got there. I think they had won like four games. And he said, you know, he said, listen, said, I'm just going to tell you. He said, you're not going to win a game. I said, okay, I get it. And we started practice And most of it was tryouts because I got the job late, wasn't able to get, you know, any recruits. But we started practice with 18 kids. We played the first year with a total of 7 from the first game to the last game. Went 13-9, second year went 23-2, then went 24-4, and then went 25-5. Last 3 years finished in the top 10 in the country. So, you know, it was, you know, I was just making stuff up. I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't know anything. I really didn't. So I was just making stuff up as I went along. And I look back on some of the things that we were trying to do strategically today and go, oh my God, surely we didn't do that. But yeah, we tried.
And still very, very young when you become the head coach at Georgia, and the support not as strong in terms of the commitment to women's basketball at the time then versus now. But what was it like to take over a program that had struggled as well as put together and start to literally build a team that was one that was going to compete for conference and national champions?
Yeah, you know, before I go there, and to me, this is interesting because, you know, I was blessed to get in on the ground floor of women's basketball. You know, it was about the time of Title IX, but it was just when things started to cook a little bit. You know, when I got in, when I was in college at Tennessee Tech, Tech had the best women's basketball program. They and Union, maybe in the entire state, Belmont. I mean, and they were ranked nationally. So that's where the power was. Now, when I was in junior college, we played 34 games against 4-year schools, and won 33 of them. The only reason we didn't win 34th one, the coach down at Westland had his kid make my kid mad, knowing that she'd punch him, and she did, and got kicked out. So we won 34 out of 34 against 4-year junior colleges. Were really, really good. I mean, really good. We scrimmaged Tennessee every year before the season started, and then again at Christmas. And I'll never forget, they usually just pounded us, you know, as they should have, and they were really good. But I'll never forget my last year at Rome State. We beat them 61-60. And when I left the gym, it was on a, I'll never forget, it was on a Friday night. Rockwood was playing a high school football game, and I wanted to go see it. And I hung around, and I finally said, I can't stay any longer. So I left. When I left, Pat still had them on the baseline running sprints. and if I'm not mistaken, they finished the year ranked number one in the country. But we were that good. We really were. I mean, we were legitimately that good. So I get to Georgia, and prior to getting there, these guys had boycotted. I mean, this team had boycotted a game. The coach had boycotted another game, and the trainer had boycotted another game. So it was a mess. You know, they had never won. I think they won 6 games the year before I got there. So I went in and cut everybody, cut the whole team, held tryouts. And I got the job late, didn't have a chance to recruit, held tryouts. A couple of kids went with me from junior college, Bernadette Locke from Loudon, Denise Dunlap from Knox West, Teresa Duncan from Clinton, and we teed it up. And again, I think we went 16-9, and then the next year won the NIT, which was the first national championship that any team in the Southeastern Conference, not that the Southeastern Conference sponsored us at that time because they didn't, but it was the first national championship that any team won. But, you know, it was different. I was recruiting, and not everybody was. It was a strange thing. You know, I came from the guys, so I knew something about recruiting. I think I knew a lot, actually, about recruiting. We jumped way out ahead of everybody, just recruiting the heck out of the entire country. You know, my third year, signed the number one player in the country, Janet Harris from Chicago. So we got off to a great, great start. And I think my fifth year, we're in the Final Four. My seventh year, played for the national championship in 85.
Our guest, Andy Landers, who's been selected for induction into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame. Now, Andy, your team at Rhone State, that was a women's team, right?
Yeah.
So why did you elect to go that direction instead of coach men? And did you ever have a desire to coach men?
Great question. To answer the second question first, I thought I wanted to coach guys after I did my grad assistantship at Tennessee Tech. I thought I wanted to coach guys. But I applied for this job at Roan State, and I go over an interview, and it's assistant men's job. And I go over an interview, and I get in with the president last meeting of the day, and President Kyler Dunbar says to me, he said, look, so there's one thing about this. He said, what? He said, you got to coach a women's team. I said, all right, because that's what I always wanted to do. I grew up in Blount County. Now, you guys probably don't know this. If you do, I'm going to tell it to you like you don't. in Blount County, in the 60s, go back and look. Blount County was king of the entire state. I mean, it Porter, Walland, Everett, Friendsville. These teams went to the state tournament all the time. Porter won it four or five times. Wallen was runner-up two or three times. Friendsville. See, when I played in high school, Friendsville High School, the gym was full. We come out warm up, man, gym full. By the time we tipped off, it's half empty. They came to see the girls play. That's man. The way it was in Blount County. That's the way it was. Wow. That has since shifted over to the Murfreesboro area. You know, for a while it was Lebanon, Mount Juliet, but now the power is more in Murfreesboro area than it is anywhere else. But Blount County was king of girls basketball. I mean, it was just, as a kid, that's what impressed me. I can remember standing 6-8 people deep on the baseline against the wall at Porter High School and had to talk my way in because it sold out. On the wall.
Yeah,
on the baseline, looking over people's shoulders, watching Wallen and Porter girls play.
Hey, Andy, thank you for joining us. What a great career. 40 years, 944 wins, 36 years at Georgia, 862 wins. You coached a lot of All-Americans, Players of the Year, and so forth, and certainly very deserving, and we look forward to celebrating your induction into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame.
I look forward to it, too. You guys, nice to have me on. Hope you have a terrific weekend. Thank you.
All right. Finish
you too.
Those chores.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Andy Landers, former head coach of the Georgia women's basketball team.
We'll get a break and be back to close out hour number three of Sports Talk. Today we're brought to you by Oak Ridge Nissan, and we're right here where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
You know how to pass the time when you're on the job.
With 45 minutes of sports every hour.
99.1
The Sports Animal.
We come back to say so long for hour number three of Sports Talk. Today, the program brought to you by and here at Oak Ridge Nissan on the Turnpike, where it meets up with Illinois Avenue, and once again joined by the founder of the feast, Scott Gropp. Scott, pandemonium reigns.
It does. I'll tell you what, a great day. It is beautiful here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. 10 minutes from anywhere, if you didn't know where Oak Ridge was, 10 minutes will save you thousands of dollars. It's our month-end clearance, and I'll tell you, this last week, weekend of the month has started out like gangbusters, John.
It is a festive feeling because you've got the big colorful balloons everywhere. You've got some with really cool messages, and I think the only balloon I've seen yet was sideburns.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll tell you what, we do what we got to out here to sell a car. And I'm just telling you, folks, it's really easy here at Oak Ridge Nissan, your number one volume Nissan dealer in the entire state, number six in the country last month. And, in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, that's saying something. And I'll tell you, the reason is we're just going to take less for the new Nissan. Other dealers try the smoke and mirrors motors, I think, down there on the Clinkston Pike. Or on the Ocala Highway, or Bill Clinton. Whoo! Yeah, often imitated, never duplicated. People want to be, but you got to take the meat off the bone and give them half the bone.
It's a very basic approach. You get People get more for theirs, pay less for yours, and you get great service before, during, and after the sale. And you've made that very apparent, even with the concerns that people have. You've got each individual area where folks can have it to themselves, private, sanitized, to close a deal, or if they're just bringing their car back to get service.
That's exactly right. You know, we take care of our folks, and, you know, we're following the rules because, you know, we want everybody safe. And, yeah, we're sanitized, we're digitalized, we're homogenized. I mean, we got it all going, folks. We're taking care. Hey, this is sanitized. This is disinfected motors right here, 10 minutes from anywhere to save thousands of dollars. We're making dreams come true this weekend. You make the drive this last weekend, I promise you. It's wholesale to the public. It's like Christmas in May. Make the drive.
Come on down. Scott, thank you.
Thank you, John.
We're here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up at Illinois Avenue. Coming up, hour number 4 of Sports Talk. It starts with a trivia challenge, the Sports Picks at 6.